Yeah.
So I won't waste your time, my guy. Make this a very good interview and have a few laughs along the way.
Sounds good, bro. You already know.
All right. So welcome back from the desk below. Now, if you've been tuned into this platform, man, we're very impactful in the underground scene right now. Much like this gentleman you see right here in front of me, man. I like to say this all the time. Before there was Griselda, before there was Rock Marcy, before Duff. Well, I don't want to say before Duff now, man, but there was a time in New York City, man, where four gentlemen got together and, man, they made some music, man. And the impact that these gentlemen have, man, I'm surprised that, a lot of the underground artists, man, are actually collaborating with them, man, because they should. Because you know why? These gentlemen deserve their flowers for the work they put in throughout the years. They're actually celebrating their 20-year anniversary for their debut and only the album. I'd like to welcome my guy, formerly known as Gore-Tex. Or you may know him as Gore Elohim. Man, I got my guy Lord Goat in the building.
Peace, peace, peace. Yeah, all those names are applicable. Lord Goat, Gore Elohim, Gore-Tex, Reverend Gore-Tex. I mean, I've had so many names in the past, it doesn't even matter, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Well, because I know when I've been a fan of you for a long time, man, and I've been watching your. I actually owned a green mixtape DVD, so I've been well in tune with you guys for well over before I got into media. So I already know the gist of it right now. So I figured, I would ask you some fan questions, that you've probably never been asked before. So I was curious, Lord Goat, when you were making the name Lord Goat, we obviously know somebody ratted on you with the Gore-Tex name, but I was curious, how come you didn't stick with Gore Elohim? And is Lord Goat an actual metal band that's defunct at the moment?
I came up with the name Gore Elohim, and I'll be honest with you, for a while I liked it, and for some reason I just wanted to change. There was no real legal reasons, even though technically if I was going to use the name Gore, I couldn't really use it for more than one record.
Makes sense.
That was a legal thing. So it's like when I had the situation with Gore-Tex years ago, they said that if I want to promote myself for one record, or if I was doing a tour, let's say, I can use the name very minimally, but I can't really use it after that. So I figured I would use Gore Elohim so people could at least know where the hub is of what I'm doing now. Because, obviously in the last few years, the whole name change, it's got a lot of people confused. So some people don't even know I had to change my name twice. As far as it being a band name, I think so, but I was more influenced by a band called Goat Lord.
Okay.
And yeah, they actually were around. They broke up now. I don't think anybody knows about them or gives a shit about them really, but they were a Vegas band. They were from Las Vegas, and they just crazy dudes, you know what I mean? And like their lyrics were like really ultra offensive, and they broke up. So I was like, I could use the name or I can just switch it around. And after I kind of switched it around, I realized that there was some band using that name from, I think, Australia or somewhere, but
Yeah.
that shit doesn't bother me because nobody knows who they are. Nobody cares. And yeah, I just didn't really care. I like the way it sounded. I'll be honest with you, I'm still not in love with it. Like, it's not my favorite name. My name I would choose right now would be my real fucking name, which is Gore-Tex.
Yeah.
So as an artist, it's extremely frustrating when you can't use your own name and hundreds and thousands of people know you as a certain name, but you can't use the name, So it's very frustrating to have to like start from scratch and try to come up with something you feel comfortable with, as well as something you like. And that's never going to happen again. I mean, I told this story 100 times. Everybody knows how I actually got my name,
Yeah.
it was more special that Q-Tip from Tribe actually gave me the blessing to use the name. So the fact that I can't use the name and I had to start over, it was very anticlimactic for me as far as the name. Some people could just pick a name and, like Bill is just Ill Bill. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? He's that's
simple.
him. Like, right. I can't just do that. I can't be like Murder Mitch. I mean, I can, but yeah, so it's been really frustrating, bro. You have to start, and then with social media, branding yourself, branding yourself generally takes about a year or two.
Yeah, sure.
So, it's like that didn't really work either because people just confused, It doesn't matter how much press I do. It's just like there's like gatekeepers, or I don't know what the fuck you want to call it, but it's like people make it very convenient not to be able to find my music or not be able to find my vinyl, or people want to claim, oh, what's his name now? We don't know what it's, it's annoying. It's been a hindrance. You know what I mean? So I'm not gonna lie and say, oh yeah, I love the whole concept. I know for a fact some people don't like the name, but I don't give a fuck. There's nothing I can do about it. It seems I'm gonna have to it's like I was gonna have to pick something
Yeah.
after a while. So it's like, what are you gonna pick? It's like if you don't have something that, because everyone's gonna know me as Gore.
Oh yeah, of course.
So what do I use? I can't use anything but Gore for more than one record. So that's why I did Electric Lucifer, Gore Elohim. I can't be Gore Sabbath or Gore Manson, yeah, anything. I can't really use that again. So that's why people go, why'd you change the name again? Because I could only do one record using the Gore name. So, it's like a whole other headache. I was like, you know what? I was like, I don't give a fuck. Like, my name could be anything. My name could be, it doesn't really matter. If people are going to find out about the music and if they're interested in the music, they'll find out about it. If they're not, then they're just going to have excuses and say, oh, I didn't know he changed his name. And, I didn't know, but you knew years ago.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
you fuck with me or you don't fuck with me. That's really where it's at with a lot of people. And a lot of these dudes are just, a lot of these dudes are fake and phony in the industry. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like people who fuck with me, fuck with me. You know where to find me. You know what I'm about. It's like anybody who follows me knows I put out quality shit. You know what I'm saying?
Of
Maybe
course.
it's not as much, it's not as quick as other artists. You know what I'm saying? Because every artist putting out a record, albums, two albums a year, a new single every month. So in a sense, you can say I'm not as consistent as other rappers who work faster that just put out tons of music. But my track record is always there
Oh,
as
yeah.
never having put out anything I feel that's been whack. You know what I mean? So it's like a scale, it's a give or take. You know what I'm saying? It's like I had to do this and A, B, and C and all these trials and tribulations, but I never was forced to put out anything whack or anything I can't stand behind. You know what I mean? So to me, that was the pros and cons and the I guess the negative and positives about changing the name. You know what I mean?
Well, what I like about like the name change new t now too is like with this whole new like if you probably noticed now too, like the boom bap renaissance, the drumless beats is actually making a comeback, but that was there years ago now too. And we're having like a
Right.
generation of kids. Like I'm 34, I ain't no kid no more, but we have like a whole new generation who listen to like a Griselda or Rock Marciano or Ito, but then they discover like I heard a Load Goat on Ito's album. Let me check out like Load Goat and Stu Baner's album, and it puts them on to somebody who never may have heard of you before. And they're like, I actually
No doubt.
love Load Goat. Then they actually find out due to track record, they're like, oh, and then they go back and do the history. So I think the name change is actually a good thing too. And like we call it blessing in disguise.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it depends how you look at it. I really didn't have a choice, so I made the best out of it. I agree with what you said. I mean, for people that don't know, they'll see me on so and so's album or do a beat for this guy. So that does help. But also it's interesting when people don't know my past.
Of
I'll get
course.
messages from people that are like, yo, I'm really digging the shit. I like that beat or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they don't know I did something like years ago for somebody. They don't know I rapped on somebody's beat. So it's interesting to see people find out about older stuff because I don't really even like to promote the older stuff because I'm not one of these artists that live in the past. Like I don't like I'm saying I get people why they like my old records. That's cool. You know what I'm saying? But I don't live off of them in a sense like it doesn't make me dope because I put out some dope record 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That shit don't matter to a lot of people. It matters, yo, what is this guy doing now? Is he official now? Is he is like, you know what I'm saying? And it's like you can't really, it's like you can't really brush aside the truth. You know what I'm saying? You could say, some kids could say, oh, I don't like those guys, or you know, you get kids that are like 20 years old. They just
Yeah.
heard their first Benny record. You know what I mean? They just sold a nickel bag of pot. They're like, I don't fuck with them dudes. They don't know any better. You know what I'm saying? They don't know the history is not, in a sense, it's like our shit to me, and it's just my opinion, our shit still sounds new to where you can't really, you know, and I'm not saying it because I think I'm great or I'm amazing, but it's like, for instance, the other day, I was listening to somewhere, I think it was Spotify, I don't know, some streaming thing, and a song came on with somebody I did. It's like maybe 3, 4 years ago, but even maybe 5 years ago, but I didn't even like, it sounded brand new, you know what I'm saying? To at least to my ears. So
Yeah.
even going back further, if you put on older stuff, it's like I feel like I get hated on because some people still don't understand it. You know what I'm saying? They'll put on something from 15 years ago and they'd be like, yo, bro, I don't even understand what the fuck you're talking about in your verse. Like, I don't get it, you know? And
Yeah.
I'll explain it to them. And it's still 15 years later. And it's like, don't be mad at me because you don't understand what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not going to slow down my shit and dummy down for people that don't know what I'm talking about. Like, I've had to do that for years. Like, I got to be like, all right, man. I see, like, I'm dealing with people that ain't that sharp. Kids ain't as sharp as I think they are. So now I got to dumb it down for people. You know what I'm saying? People ain't getting it. So, you know, at the end of the day, I do it for me. So it's sort of like I'm having fun. If people want to check it out, that's great. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to compromise my style to make it more tangible, more something so people could digest it better.
What I also noticed now too, it's like you guys broke down a lot of doors now. Like what I noticed now too, like I like how you're wearing the Slayer shirt right now too, because I remember it was in like the maybe mid-2000 when Dipset was popping, when all these rappers, they started wearing like, you know, rocker tees like Metallica. So I was curious about like, you know, like when you started seeing like, you know, the mainstream starts going that way, but you guys been doing that, like what goes through your head? No one's like, man, I was early on that. Like, what goes through your head when you see something like that?
I mean, it's weird because it's like I've seen it and I've seen the very beginning of it, I've seen the middle of it, and then you see the horror show where you see like Kim Kardashian coming out of a place wearing like an Exodus shirt or Iron Maiden, you know, and like, you know, this guy from Blink 182, Travis, like he's married to one of these Kardashians, you know, and like she's wearing like a Napalm Death shirt. So it's just kind of weird because the thing is, like, this was always my thing because this is what, like, I felt comfortable with wearing whatever I wanted to wear. See, people would like, rappers would be scared to wear what they want to wear. They felt like, you know, one day they can't wear this or they can't wear that. Like, that's not really the way I grew up. Like, I grew up where I grew up, I kind of just wore what I wanted to wear, whatever made me comfortable. So in the 80s, like in the mid or late 80s, or let's just say in the early 80s, like I'm a young kid, I'll wear a pair of brand new Pumas, but I'll rock an Iron Maiden shirt and a pair of brand new Lees. Or like I incorporated that shit because it made it comfortable for me, and nobody else was doing that because
And
they were
squeeze the pump.
ashamed. Right. They were ashamed. They were embarrassed. They thought that they couldn't be themselves because a lot of people, not of color, or just to say non-white rappers, like a lot of these guys are really concerned about, they're so worried about what other people think of them based on their credibility. But it's like I was there from the beginning, you know what I'm saying? So I never felt any certain way, like I got a front for people or I got to show off that, you know, whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? It's like I've been there from the beginning. So I've always felt comfortable doing that. It's weird to see people doing it, but it's like more commercial rappers. It's like rappers that don't know who the fuck Morbid Angel is or whoever these guys are, and they'll just rock the shirts, which to me is funny. It doesn't bother me. It bothers me when the people that talk shit about it, then they want to go and do it, you know? Or they'll wear a shirt, they don't even know about the band. You know what I'm saying? It's like you don't have to be a diehard fan, but it's kind of like you don't need to be wearing it either unless you know what you're supporting.
Yeah,
You
they
know?
gotta know at least something. Like, you know, when I see people like seeing Wu-Tang, I always want to ask them, can you name all 9 members?
Hip hop's always taken forms of influence from other cultures. You know, back in the day, hip hop was just as much a part of rock as it was funk, you know, as it was soul. You know, Africa Bambaataa was a huge Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath fan. I mean, even though I know Africa Bambaataa, people think he's a weirdo and he fucked up and, you know, it's whatever. I'm just talking about the roots and legends
Oh, yeah.
of hip hop. And like Bambaataa and those guys, they respected other forms of music. That's why, like back in the day, Bambaataa, he or whoever, Kool Herc, whoever these guys, they'd be cutting up like, you know, Aerosmith, The Power of Zeus, like all these obscure rock, you know, stuff that came from a rock background. You know, also keep in mind, it's like, you know, Run DMC used heavy metal guitars on their first three records.
Very true. I was going to say that.
So, and you know, and to be honest with you know, those riffs to Rockbox and the other joint, those riffs are still hard.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Like if you put that shit on, that riff is hard as fuck, bro. And it's like, who thought of doing that? Nobody thought of doing that except them, because they were surrounded by people that were also, you know, Rick Rubin, Def Jam, all those guys. They were around rock too. But Run DMC were the first to really incorporate that. And PE and Public Enemy, because obviously Public Enemy, back in the day, they sampled Slayer
Oh, yeah.
for one of the songs. So, you know, I thought that was, for me, that was like, I couldn't believe that shit. I was like, yo, Public Enemy is sampling Slayer? That's
Yeah.
crazy, bro. You know, it didn't make sense to me, but at the same time, it made all the sense in the world, because all that sounding stuff like Public Enemy, to me, was very closely related to metal and thrash, and just the aggression of hardcore punk is just coming from a different area. You know what I mean? Public Enemy are coming from the ghettos of Long Island, whereas a lot of these hardcore kids, they're also coming from shitty areas in Brooklyn or Long Island. So there was a common struggle. So those scenes are very closely related without paying a lot of lip service about it, you know? Because some guys in hip hop don't want to admit it, that they like metal, or because the thing is, it's not really cool in hip hop to admit you like anything except Wu-Tang and Griselda and Mobb Deep. People don't want to talk about, like, that's real music, but I'm talking about real music. You know what I mean? Like, people didn't want to, like, really. People didn't even really want to talk about it. It was like almost like a weakness, you know?
Yeah, it's
But
like
then you
kind
find out, like these, you know, a lot of these guys are listening to that, and like, you know, like just stuff that's not even hip hop. You know what I mean? Like back in the day, I'm in LA. I was like walking up Santa Monica, and like Redman and Meth are in like a Chevy Suburban, blasting Red Hot Chili Peppers, Californication, at like the highest decibels possible. So I was like, yo, Red Meth are listening to Chili Peppers, which isn't like them listening to Slayer or DRI or Napalm Death, but it's still cool that they're open-minded enough to at least pump that in the truck, you know? So I
yeah.
thought that was pretty cool.
So like even like with music now too, because like what I like to say about this underground renaissance is now too, like there's a lot of vinyl deals going on too. Like people say things like to go around in circles now too, and like vinyl's through the roof now too. So I was curious now too, knowing that you're not big on your past releases and stuff like that now too. But have you ever thought about like, you know, like a celebration for like your Art of Dying, but just like putting your name on it as Lowe's Goat, like for some vinyl? Because like I don't think it probably was pressed up on vinyl back in the day. But if you think about it today, your vinyl's just going through the roof nowadays.
I mean, definitely. I mean, the thing is, the Art of Dying is a project that's not, it's not just my project. You know, there's another person involved. So, with that said, it's like, I don't think that would happen. I think it would be a cool idea, but I wouldn't really count on it. You know, plus the company itself, I would have to stick a different name on that. And for me to stick a different name on that, I still got to deal with the same people.
Yeah, I
So
guess you got a point
it's
on that.
not really, you know, it's not really, unfortunately, it's not really that feasible for me to really do that, which sucks because a lot of people would want to hear, I mean, I know number one, the album needs a remix, because, you know, I was never happy with the mix and the mastering on that record in particular, comparative to all the other records that came out. It didn't sound right to me, but that was just my opinion, you know what I mean?
But one of your singles now too, like I love this, and I was like, I remember the first time I heard it on the Green DVD, it's your single Hatred. Man, like I was always curious, like how come that never made like the actual album for the Futures Now? Because I remember when you guys did the show at SOBs, you performed it there, and just the energy off that record, like you know when you hear see someone perform it live and you go back and listen to it and it hits you different? Like I was
Yeah, of course.
like how come like that track like in particular was never included on that album?
Because Hated from the get-go, and the B-side is New America to that record. That was originally to be dropped as a 12-inch. Hated and New America were going to be released on my boy's label at the time, which was called Imperial Records. And we did the record, which is exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to put a record out with two new songs that I did that weren't released. So I did those as a solo artist, like those, the guys from Nonfiction, they were never on that beat. So it was never really a thing I brought to the table. It wasn't like I said, okay, Futures Now is almost done. Let me put Hated on it. It was just gonna be a 12-inch. It was just gonna be a record. You know what I mean? So we weren't gonna put it on them. People ask me what happened to the record, and it's not really, there's not much I can say. It's a hard to find record, and it's extremely rare because not the guy who actually put it out through his label. Because I mean, these are both guys I know for years, but the guy who put out the actual vinyl itself, the guy who had the pieces of the records, I don't know exactly what happened. If he went bankrupt or he had some issues, and I don't know exactly what happened. All I know is I didn't really get a lot of copies of that record either. And I know there were a lot of records, well, at least a lot of copies floating around at one point that I tried to get my hands on. But shit happens. So I don't know if this guy is sitting on them or if he got rid of them. But yeah, that song was just a single. My friend Jigsaw produced that. And there's a B-side, New America, which I did. So I did the B-side. We were going to do a video for that. Never transpired. But we used to do it. I mean, when Nonfiction performed,
Oh
each
yeah,
of us,
definitely. Yes, sir.
yeah, each of us would do a song. So sometimes, I might do Hated, or, I might do Celebrity Roast, or I might do one of these other joints,
Well, like shout out to my guy Search if you're watching. Yo, Search, you show a lot of love, guy. What's up, my guy? Yo, shout out to Search right there. So
No doubt.
I was curious now with Search now too. During the early days of Nonfiction, yes, we all know Search was a member. But do any particular records exist or search on the on these records that were just never released that you can remember? Because I know it was a while back.
Yeah, there's definitely a few records that we did. We did more as demos at the
Yeah.
beginning, which we didn't
Stop
really
from down
release.
label, right?
Correct. So, I mean, it's not like a plethora of stuff, but there's probably maybe three or four songs that Search was on that people didn't really hear. I mean, obviously the first single we did, he was on that, Legacy.
Oh yeah,
And
but like the ones we actually never got to hear. Because you know how when you shoot
yeah.
a demo, we never get to hear those demos.
Correct. Correct. Well, I mean, again, there wasn't that, it wasn't like he was on the whole album. It
Yeah,
wasn't
no,
like
yeah.
he was going to be on The Future Is Now. Like we did a couple of things, and to be honest with you, we would have did more, but the vibe wasn't really there. Like he wasn't really interested in writing lyrics. I mean, he was trying to handle some other business and stuff, which was cool, but as far as on the lyrical tip, he wasn't really holding his own, So the thing is, like, we would just try to help him out. You know what I'm saying? And but he was kind of doing a million different things. So he would have been on more songs that we released if he was around.
Because it's always
I
one of
mean,
those
I got kids too, but this guy's got kids and he's running out of the studio. He's doing a million things. So it's like he could have sat down and sat and wrote 10 verses.
Yeah,
Just
exactly.
right. Like he didn't have the time.
And it's always like
That's
I always like I don't know if you watch Marvel, but it's like I like to, some of the hip hop's what if. One of the what ifs is like, yeah, what if the Search was on like the Future Is Now? Like what would that album like have an impact now too? But I also like how it adds on to his legacy now too, because the four of you gents went through hell making that album, I heard. Like
Yeah, it was a nightmare. Everything, you know, I mean, it was a nightmare because we had to overcome so many obstacles that a lot of these kids, you know what I'm saying, these dudes don't get it. Because it's like these new kids fall out of bed and they got 50,000 followers on Instagram. You know, they're doing work with companies. They get, you know, it's all this other stuff that wasn't in the hip hop industry when we started getting big. Like, we have our legacy, whatever you want to call it. We have our legacy now because of people that really felt it in their heart, not because of social media. Because the fact is, social media really hasn't done much for nonfiction. It's really not. It's really not. It's like we missed the boat because we were so early doing that. Like, we were repping so hard that it was almost, it worked against us because we didn't have the internet. We did all that shit pre-internet, bro. We hustled, we made connects, we called record labels. I mean, I'm doing this shit since I'm like 11 years old. I've been doing music. I've been listening to music as a listener since I'm 4 years old. So I'm not like, whatever's going on, like whatever I'm here for, I've been destined to do this shit. I could have went to law school. I could have been a pharmacist if I, you know, went to college. If I, you know, went to college after grad, you know, I didn't graduate. But if I didn't, there's things I could have done. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, it's a legacy, but it feels good to know that we did it without anybody helping us. I mean, really helping us. We had a little bit of help, but not really, because everything that somebody tried to help us with, they took three back. So if we got one, they took three back. They, you know, it was a constant thing. And even finding a record label, people don't even know that because nobody gets record deals anymore. The only kids that get record deals now are guys that hang out with, like, you know, kids in Florida and drill rappers. And, you know, A&R people that work at record labels aren't 30 years old anymore. These guys are 20 years old. They're 30 pounds. They have braids. And they wear latex pants.
It's true. I don't like to agree with it, but it is true, though.
So those are the guys signing people to labels. And people that do real shit, underground, whatever, boom bap, whatever you want to call it, there's no chance in hell they're going to get an actual record deal. Like a real record deal. Because all that is just the labels basically giving you a bank loan. And they don't want to bank on anybody that's over 25 years old. And that's a fact, because I've spoken to A&R guys that work at labels. And if you're 20, 28 years old, if you're 31, you're not getting a deal. You're over, bro. So, you know, I'm friends with a lot of rappers, and there's some guys I know, you know, that, you know, it's not about age, but it's like, there's guys I know that are like in their 40s, and they're talking about trying to start now. Like, now they want to get serious.
Yeah, bro, that's not
like, yo, bro, I was doing this when I was 16, and you were nowhere to be found. I was doing this when I was 35, you were nowhere to be found. Now all these guys are 46, and they're jumping out. And they expect something. And it's like, it's too late, bro. It's not like, you should have some people close to you that should tell you, don't do this. It's not for you.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not for you.
It's gonna work, bro. Like, see, that's what I like about like your story now too, is because like, what can people like you notice to get like a taste of the industry? You start to change, but you never change throughout that whole time. Like, I remember there was a time when, like, even like, I remember when MySpace was a thing now too, and I remember when you were missing like from the Warp Tour, and they were like putting like rap forms on there, like Gore-Tex can't make the show, Gore-Tex is drunk. But like, what I like about now too is that you never let that got you. Even like when the internet started booming with MySpace, you never, like, nobody fed into that. That's what I like about it.
Well, the problem was, it's like, the way the internet was at that time, it's like the internet was a new thing. So if somebody could type out a page of 65 or 70 lies, it doesn't really matter, because once you put it online, people read that as the truth anyway.
Yeah.
So in a sense, it's like, it was real funny, because back then, you know, I'm getting messages from people like, yo, why are you not touring? Is it true you're an alcoholic? And I'm like, it's hysterical to me, because everybody that knows me knows I never drink. I'm not an alcoholic. I've drank maybe 8 beers to 10 beers in my fucking life.
Oh, shit.
Everybody knows, I'm saying, everybody knows I fuck with this.
Oh yeah, of course, they're loud. I don't even know.
So what? So you know, it's like, listen, people can say whatever they want. Anybody in the know, everybody knows that all that shit was bullshit. And let me tell you something, people are still actively working just as hard to fuck my shit up today as it was yesterday.
Yeah, that's a fucking
so in that sense, don't think anything changed. Just because you don't see, you know, like emails or pictures that are, you know, that people Photoshop pictures. That shit, let me tell you something, that shit only blew me up in a sense. Because people are like, you know, how could all this stuff be true? But I was being quiet, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm like, you know something? It's not even, when the time is right, then I would say something. But until then, it's all a joke, you know what I'm saying? If people aren't talking about you, hating you, and trying to ruin your career constantly, you're not doing it right. You're just not doing it.
And it's also, it's also now too, because your legacy now too is now too, a lot of people cannot say they were acknowledged by the greats, because when people think of Pete Rock, DJ Premier, you worked with all of these guys, and it's like with nonfiction now too, this is what I like about nonfiction now too. You guys got to tour the world with your music. You guys didn't go on trips trying to promote yourselves out there. You guys were getting booked out there. I remember seeing you guys at stadiums, and like, I think it was in like Columbia. You guys did like a stadium, it's like, and everybody there, like, so did you ever see that when making the future?
Yeah, that was one. Actually, it's interesting you bring that up. That's one of the craziest shows we did, because we turned up there, and I never been to Columbia. You know, the group at the time, we never been to Columbia, so we didn't really know what to expect. So we get over there, and you know, the promoter tells us it's basically 15,000 people, and it's like they do this thing once a year for hip hop, and they have all the groups in Columbia come, like local groups, and they usually get one or two guys from the States to headline the show. So I was just really psyched to do it, because I never been there. And we get there, and it's like 100 degrees out, but it's like a real soccer old school stadium, like the cement stadiums where they're not even, you know, the seats aren't even real. They're just cement seats, you know? So it's just one huge piece of cement, you know? And it's a crazy show, because we're in a van, and the show, that particular show in Columbia, was on top of a mountain. So we had to take, so we had to get in the van and drive 25 minutes up the mountain. So as soon as we get up the mountain, it's mad people, bro. It's like, I see 10,000 people, and I look in the crowd, and I see dudes jumping around drinking 40s of beer. And I'm like, yo, this place has no security. I'm like, yo, 10,000 people in Colombia with no security, somebody could get really fucked up here. You know what I mean? Somebody could get real fucked up. So we get there, and we had merch with us. We had T-shirts and all this other shit. So we go to set up our merch, and the promoter comes in, because this guy we brought with us from the States to sell merch with us, this guy Pete, he put the merch out there for 2 seconds on the table, and they already stole the merch. People already robbing them left and right. Bro, he couldn't even take the stuff out of the box. They were ripping the box apart. So he took what he could, and he ran back in, and he's like, yo, shit is crazy out there. They want you guys. You know what I'm saying? So for us, that was the biggest festival we had done up until that date. You know what I'm saying? For me personally, you know, like 14, 15,000 people, that was a lot of people for myself. You know what I'm saying? And, yo, it was crazy, bro. People were singing the words. Like, at least 30% of the crowd, at least people in front of me, everybody was singing the choruses. And you know what I'm saying? I was like, yo, this is bugged out. Like, I didn't really know that they were really that tuned in with us, you know? So, yeah, for us, that was, you know, that was one for the books, because it's also interesting. After the show, we were going to get in the van to leave. And it's like, we could tell we were getting set up, because like all these chicks were coming after us. They were like, yo, come in the van. We're going to a party. And it was so weird, because it's like, in my other ears, like this other homie, he's like, yo, don't get in that van. You know what I'm saying? He's like, I wouldn't get in the van if I were you. I'm like, yo, bro, we're out of here, bro. I'm like, you know, I don't give a I don't give a fuck about pussy like that, bro. I'm not trying to get killed. You know what I'm saying? I'm not like, I'm good, bro. I'm like, let's go back to the hotel, you know? But what's interesting also is we go back to the hotel the next day because we were going to stay there for like 2 extra days. I tried to get weed. And for some reason, the weed this kid gave me was the worst I've ever seen. It was like, very weird. It's like he went outside and he pulled out grass from the street. Yeah. And he literally put it in a bag. I'm like, what the fuck is this, bro? You can't smoke it. You'll die.
Even though it's called grass, you can't smoke it.
Exactly, bro. This guy was really trying to give me actual grass, you know?
See, with that being said now, too, did you ever think that you'd be able to travel the world with your music? Well, first starting out, 96 till 2002? Because you've been, like, you guys been booked since, I think you guys first went overseas in 96. But did you think it would be a continuous stint throughout your career?
I mean, one part of me, I would only say yes because of one part of me, we were about to get signed to a major label, which is a whole other topic that we had so many opportunities and bad luck that we were almost signed to two major labels. So when you're in communication with a label that you're going to get signed, you know, you're automatically thinking that even if you don't blow up and have a platinum record that year, with the record deal, you're going to make 8 albums.
Yeah. Solid.
Because that's part of the contract. We were signed to Geffen Records, which was a major label at the time, which was Guns N' Roses record label. And the contract we had was for 8 albums. So, you know, every year you're getting a higher advance. So if all you have to do is make sure you don't get dropped. So if you don't get dropped from a label, they have to give you money every time you put a record out,
yeah,
which also exponentially gets higher. So if we had a label and we stayed with Geffen by the fourth album, you know, we would be getting $800,000 up front, $900,000, you know. So we would be in a certain league where we're just on some other shit. Like, we would just gradually gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. So in one sense, to answer your question, yeah, I did think if we were actually going to get a record deal and sign it and be part of a major label roster, then we would be around in 20 years. In my mind, I was like, if this shit falls through, everybody's fucked. You're going to be selling drugs. You're going to be cutting roast beef in the deli. You know, and that's nothing wrong with that, but that's what we were dealing with. So the fact that we had to deal with all this stress from labels, you know, became a whole other thing, you know. So we were the group, like the almost what would have happened group, because we were in so many bigger situations where other people, let's say they had good luck, and, you know, instead of us having shitty fucking luck, you know, they would have gotten signed, you know. So to Search's credit, because you mentioned Search before, to Search's credit, he tried to get us a deal by bringing us up to Russell Simmons' condo in Manhattan when Russell Simmons lived, I don't know if you're familiar with Manhattan, when there was a Tower Records on Broadway. Anyway, there's a Tower Records on Broadway in the city back in the day, you know? It was a very popular Tower Records. And above that, like 45 stories high, Russell Simmons lived above that in a penthouse apartment.
It must have been a penthouse.
It was literally a penthouse. So, you know, like shit like that. We were kids, bro. We were just kids. I mean, you know, we rolled up. We were hanging out with Search. You know, Search's like, yo, I'm going to take you guys to see Russell. I'm trying to get you guys a deal. Honestly, me being a fan with the history I had, I couldn't believe it.
Of course.
I was like, are we really going to Russell's crib right now? Are we really going there? And we did. We went up there. You open, you know, you get off the floor. The elevator opens right in his apartment.
Right there.
Yeah. So, you know, there was so many steps that we did. I can't think of any group that really paid as many dues as we did. You know, and I'm not saying it like we're cool or it doesn't matter. But I'm saying I don't know anybody that paid dues like we did.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody at the same time that was probably let down as much as we were from the industry, considering how far we would get, and then we would get knocked off and have to start here again.
Then we would
get interest from another label, not get signed, and we'd have to, you know. So we were climbing so gradual, where other groups, once they got that plug, or if they met somebody or whoever, they'd get a deal, and then 3 months later, you would see them with a video, and then they'd blow up, and that's the end of it. And then, you know, with us, everything was difficult, and everything was a game, and then this guy's trying to rob us, this guy fucks up the deal. So it's like we went through a lot of shit that a lot of guys doing this now wouldn't even understand, because those opportunities don't even exist.
Yeah, because it's like, yeah, because it changed so drastically now, too. Like, even, like, I remember, I like how you brought up the labels now, too. Because I think that label would have been perfect for you. When Paul Rosenberg expressed, like, interest in managing you guys, I remember when I heard that rumor, I was like,
yeah,
that would have been perfect for Shady Records, Nonfiction and Shady. Didn't have to have Eminem on it. Just the fact that the Brandon was on it, too.
Right, right. That's what we said. That's what we said, because... Yeah, also, that's another thing, because Paul, when Eminem first came out, nobody knew who Eminem was.
Yeah.
So Paul took Eminem to Manhattan, and he was taking him to all the shows. So we were doing the show. I think we were opening up for Run DMC or something. I don't know exactly what it was, but he brought M to the show. So M came to our show, and nobody knew who he was. You know what I'm saying? He's wearing some dirty black leather jacket, a hat. Nobody knew. Nobody cared. I knew he was going to blow up just by the way Paul was handling him. But Paul did like our stuff. Paul was a fan. And we were kind of like, yo, man, can you know, we've been doing this. You know, can you help us out? He's like, yo, you guys are fresh. I love you guys. I just don't have the time, man. He's like, this guy, Marshall, is taking up all my time, bro. He's like, I don't even have time for my family. Like that's how much he was working for M. So I think Paul wanted to help us, but it was too much on his plate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that didn't really work out. And then like Rick Rubin from Def Jam Warner Brothers, Rick Rubin also, listen, he knew who we were. And, you know, we had like a mutual person try to like talk to him, be like, yo, help these guys out. Like these guys are the real deal. And he was just like, supposedly what I heard, he was like, yo, I heard about those guys. Those guys are really dope. I don't have the time right now. I'm just like, I got a million other things to do right now. I'm not really in the process of like signing a new group and doing that, you know? So it's like, all right, cool. It's like, what's next? You know, it's like how many people you can get to a certain level back then, but how many people are going to deny you, you know, for whatever reason, it doesn't really matter the reason. So then we were going to get a deal with Warner Brothers from somebody else, which was T-Ray, our other homie. So we go up to Warner Brothers, and this is like when all that Linkin Park shit, remember Linkin Park came out? And all that shit.
Styles of
and those home. Guys were, right, and those guys were going to sign Linkin Park. So the A&R kid at Warner, he was this Asian dude named Kevin, and Kevin was a huge fan of Nonfiction, you know what I'm saying? Kevin was like, listen, you know, Nonfiction should be on Warner Brothers, y'all are dope, I really want to get these guys interested in you. So we can just sign you up. So we were like, all right, cool. Finally, this should happen, you know? And we gave Kevin our tape, which had like Black Helicopters. It had specifically CIA is Trying to Kill Me. That was the second song on there. So, excuse me.
I know.
So long story short, we give Kevin the tape and we go back for another meeting at Warner Brothers, and he's like, yo, bro, I played the Nonfiction tape. I played the demo for Linkin Park.
Yeah.
So we were like, all right, cool, because they showed us a video. I think it was One Step Beyond, but the first single.
One Step Closer, yeah.
So they played me One Step Closer, which I thought the song was cool. I didn't think the fashion was cool and the dyed hair. I thought that shit was whack. But I thought the music was okay. So I was like, yeah, bro, these guys are cool. And he was like, yo, these guys love you. You know, like I played them the demo. They asked me to copy it. Like, you know, I didn't know what to say. These guys, they loved it. And they wanted to do something with Nonfiction. So we were like, all right, cool. Like, we'll fuck with them. So he was like, yeah, you know, we're going to sign them. Well, they're already signed. but we got to do some preliminary stuff. So let's see how this works out, and you guys can work together and do something, you know, a video or a single. So we were like, all right, cool. Even though we were more on the urban, we were more from like the urban, like we were a street group, basically. We weren't a put together fake tough guy thing. We were an actual street group from the streets. So it was a little different than what they were doing.
Straight from the underground.
Right. These guys are from like OC and like, you know, these guys hang out with everything.
They're from
like,
the garage. In the garage.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah. They're playing new metal and they're from Cali and like, it's just different for us. And so that's fine. Whatever. A few months go by and this guy Kevin doesn't sign us for whatever happens or the meeting, whatever happened. We didn't get signed by Warner Brothers. And the Linkin Park album comes out, the first one.
Yeah, Hybrid Theory.
And I'm listening to it, you know, because like even at the time, like my son was little, but my kid liked Linkin Park when the first album came out. Like, he was a little kid. He liked it. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, he wanted me to buy the record for him. So I bought him the record. So I put on this number six, which I think is a song called Paperclip, Papercut.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah.
And I put on Papercut and I'm like, I'm listening to it. I'm like, yo, this sounds weird. I don't know why. It sounds like it's not clicking with me. And then I hear the chorus and it's like, basically, this guy's ripped off the chorus of CIA. They ripped off like half the chorus.
Oh, yo, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so if you listen to Papercut, he's like, I'm paranoid. I'm looking over my back. So they're listening to nonfiction 85 times a day. Well, we're like, I'm paranoid. So that whole paranoid shit, they literally stole from us the same week they recorded that. You know what I'm saying? And, it's like, it's not the end of the world, but it's like, yo, bro, you guys know you stole the chorus, right? They know they did. So at least be cool. Like, we didn't get to deal with Warner Brothers, which is fine.
Yeah.
But at least they should have contacted us and said, listen, we loved your demo. We couldn't stop listening to it. We were huge fans of Nonfiction. Yeah, we stole your chorus. Big fucking deal. You know, we'll give you royalty points. So if you gave us royalty points, that record sold like 16 million copies.
What also, I want to add on to that now too, which also is kind of weird now too, because they remixed that album called Reanimation, and the whole first album was remixed. So at least they could have added you on the Papercut remix, because I remember that whole album remixed.
Right, right. But again, that's shit is weird. Yeah. So, you know, that happened. And I was like, okay, cool. So we just missed out of $500,000. All right, cool. Listen, maybe about a year later, I was in a club in L.A. and I seen the DJ from Linkin Park. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's Mr. Han.
Yeah, yes.
Right. So I see Mr. Han, and he's walking down the steps. He's wearing like a trench coat or whatever. And I'm walking up the stairs. He sees me and looks at me, and literally, he does a dash, turns around, and runs out. He like runs away from wherever he was running. He ran the fuck out of there. So I'm like, yo, really? He knows. Like, this guy knew. So it just pissed me off that we didn't have words. You know what I mean? Because he could have been a man. He could have been like, yo, bro, it ain't no thing. Just, you know, we were influenced by the chorus. He could have done anything. Here, get on a song. You know, let's do a show. Well, it could have been anything. Instead, he runs away from me. And then I'm like, let me find this guy. Because I wasn't going to attack him. I have no reason to attack him. I wanted to just look him in the face. So I see him by the bathroom, coming out of the bathroom. And I was like, Mr. Han, what's good, bro? And again, he was like mad nervous. I'm like, bro, it's all love, bro. I'm just saying what's up to you, bro. Like, you could have looked out. Yeah, you know. He's like, oh, he's like making it like cop and please like these guys do. You know how that is. He's like, oh. He's like, yo, man, my bad. He's like, yo, we got busy. Yeah, whatever. So, again, it's like losing out on hundreds of thousands of dollars. Because these guys, listen, I don't care. I'm over it. It's funny to me because people have hit me up and I'm like, yo, those guys fans of yours? I get a Nonfiction vibe on some of that album. And I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? So
that's
years ago. It's years ago. It's just funny to me.
That's crazy how you say that, because I never put that together now, too. And the more I think about it now, too, what I'm re remember from that first album, these guys were inspired by nonfiction. That whole
Yeah.
first album, nonfiction. I'm sorry, guys.
I mean, they could have done that because look how much they were jocking hip hop. Where the other guy had to do a song with Jay-Z and they tried to do a song with Outkast. Like I'm saying, it's obvious those guys liked hip hop.
Oh,
So the
yeah.
fact that after the fact they didn't reach out to us, I thought that was whack because you guys are obviously guilty about something, you
Yeah.
know.
I remember
So
when
just.
he started doing, Shinoda started doing that Fort Minor thing now, too, even with Styles of Beyond. I remember selling his
Yeah.
bands all over that. He could have gotten all friction on at least, like, Gore-Tex. Like, come on, you guys.
Anybody, Bill or me, I'm saying they could have got anybody. But that's the industry, bro. That's the fakeness of the industry.
And
You
see, like,
know, it's
oh, no, sorry, go ahead.
no, go ahead, go ahead, go ahead.
See, and this is why I like when artists do interviews now, too, because, like, us as fans, like, we get to hear about the music now, too. But when we actually get to hear about, like, the ins and outs of it now, too, it's not all glamour. Like, a lot of people should know that by now, too. It's not all bling and stuff like that. You can get severely screwed over by these labels, and you can pour your heart into something and have somebody else steal it and do nothing about it. Completely fucked.
Yeah. But, you know, the industry, the game itself is not for everybody.
That's true. You
It's
got to
not. It's like I was thinking about this the other day when you know, when we were kids and we were starting to get serious about it, even at like 16 or whatever, there's other guys that were like rapping on the scene that were like we weren't obviously we're not the only guys.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, a lot of these guys, they stopped.
Yeah.
Like all these people that were neck and neck with us. We kept going, like regardless of like I had kids, you know what I mean? Like I was working 60 hours in some deli job, you know, cutting ham and cheese, like fucking miserable. But we were working towards something, you
Yeah.
know?
I also
We were
like.
working towards like a common goal. And you know, when that doesn't happen and like you have so many letdowns that a lot of people it breaks them. Like I know a lot of people that let's say they didn't get a deal. Or they didn't get a production deal, or they didn't do a beat for so and so. And it just literally emotionally crushed them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like the industry is not for everybody. So we put so much into it that shit was not gonna stop us. I mean, we've been everywhere. You know what I mean? So it's like by 96, we hit, you know, we did 12 countries, 13 countries in Europe by 96 alone. Like we were getting booked. All the time. Like I was just like I had to quit my job, which I didn't want to do because of how funky and shit the industry is. So I was like, all right, I was a deli manager, which is just not a great job, but it's still a job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a check every week. So I had to quit my job to basically go on tour in Europe. And that's how we made our reputation. You know what I'm saying? Just by doing hundreds of shows and doing festivals and just getting in a van. Like a lot of guys, these kids don't know about that. They do a grind mode cipher, and they do a video, and they get clothes. They go buy clothes,
Oh, let's see
and
that.
that's their thing. And that's their, you know, they drop a new song every week. You know, they're best friends with these guys who run the playlist. I ain't mad at that. It's a new era. You know what I'm saying? I get it, but they don't understand how the industry really was. How any kind of rep that you would have, we have without social media. If we had social media back in 96, people would
Oh.
not believe the shit that
Oh,
we could have posted. People wouldn't believe the shit we had that we could have been posted, you know? So,
I
you
like
know, it's like I get a kick out of it because these kids don't really know any better.
yeah.
And my only thing is like you can be a fan and you can want to make records and I think that's good. But when younger kids, like you know what I'm saying, like basically teenagers, kids that are just 20 is 20, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Younger dudes, they'll ask me for advice. And I'm like, I might not be the dude you want to ask for advice. Because I'm gonna tell you not to do this shit. I'm gonna tell you the first thing you should do is quit this shit. The first thing you should do is go to school. Find something you really, really like to do that you think you're gonna have a chance. And I hate to sound fucking negative, but most of these people do not have a chance. The game is over, bro. The gatekeepers got that shit locked, bro.
That's true.
Look who they're letting in the gate. They're only letting in the gate of people who are all in the same network because it's part of that thing. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'm glad, because we never sold ourselves for anything other than what we were. I didn't have to say, "Ooh, I know I'm down with so-and-so. I'm like a new guy." Nah. West Side Gunn already said it. He already said, "Yo, Nonfiction, blah, blah, blah. All those guys, we solicit their shit, pop their shit up, boom, 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 boom." So we know that it got to the right people. You understand what I'm saying? All that shit that we did, it got to the right people.
Yeah. The ones that matter.
Conway and Westside love Nonfiction. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, we didn't go out of our way to try to kiss anybody's ass. We didn't do any of that. You know what I'm saying? Those guys, that guy didn't even have to mention us. He didn't have to mention me. We're not boys. We don't talk. Like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, text him and do records with him. And, like, there's not, you know, it is like, I like sitting from the back and I'm like, yo, these kids are vile. These kids are dirty as fuck. You know what I'm saying? And Derringer was one of my favorite producers as soon as that shit popped off, because the kind of beats that he was making, we were doing those beats as kids. And you know what? People are like, yo, nobody wants to hear that. Those are weird samples. Those are weird. That's really evil. That's really, nobody wanted to hear that shit. And now it's like, kids can't believe it. You know what I'm saying? They're just like taking, they're going crazy. You know, so I personally like that shit because I like seeing it. I like seeing newer people with, you know, obviously if it's in their heart and it's the right way and it's the right feeling for it, you'll get further doing that. You know what I'm saying? Because if it's in your heart, people can see that it's really real. You know, but now every week there's 30 new rappers.
Yeah.
Every week. And those 30 rappers are putting out 30 new albums every week. And it's all starting to sound very much alike. The same kind of drums, the same sounds. Listen, I don't have a problem with drumless beats because I make them myself.
Oh, of course.
I just made new beats, zero drums.
For the Ill Bill album, y'all go check that out, y'all.
Nah, no doubt. I know that's respect. But it's like, if it fits, it fits. If it doesn't fit, you don't got to jam them in there just to make a point or just to say, oh, well, I don't make beats without drums. Make a beat that sounds right for the job you're trying to do with it. Don't worry if there's drums on it or not. Is it musical? Is it fly? Is it dope? That's the only credential I look for. I don't care about drums. There's already drums on the sample I'll take. There's already drums on it. So, you know.
I like how you brought up producing now, too. Because I remember when you were working at the deli, how many people can say they gave their demo to Lil' Kim? Hey, yo, Lil' Kim, I got some beats for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, that was one of the perks of working in Manhattan when you worked at those delis, because you would see people come in. You know, so me and 10K, who back in the day, he produced some of the Nonfiction stuff like 4Ws and some of the stuff, I think We All Bleed, on Futures Now, like 10K produced that. Sure. That's the homie from
Department of Forensics, y'all, if you're listening.
Right. So that's the homie from Glenwood back in the day. You know what I'm saying? That's the homie from like the 80s and stuff. So me and him were on the grind. You know what I'm saying? Like we were doing stuff from years ago. And me and him, the beats we were doing were very Griselda-like beats, like very just dirty. And you know, we didn't care about drums either. We just cared if the loop was fresh. But I will say the dude that brought it back, that constantly made beats for no drums, was Marciano. You know what I'm saying? And Rock Marciano, he was doing that shit back in 14, 15, and 16 when people didn't care. They weren't even making beats without drums. He kept steady doing it. So I'll give him his props because he basically created that shit again in the 2000s and the 2010s. He was doing that. So, respect to Rock, you know what I'm saying?
I like that. I like that right there now, too, because everyone says, like, you know, he's the one who's, like, brought that back. But also now, too, I like how these guys know the history of you now, too. They may not have to do records with you. They shout you guys out, though, and they say, hey, that inspired me. I was like, you guys know me. Like, it blows my mind.
Right.
Because it's like, You know, just do it all of them as a fan, but that's the fan in me, though. That's the fan.
Right. Yeah, but we don't, you know, it's like we don't really see that much because
Yeah.
it's not really climate to do that because you got so many angry guys. People are scared to give props to other people.
I noticed.
It's like social media. It's like these guys, they're scared to hit a button twice. They're scared to click something.
They're
And
calling
that's
it
when you
trying.
know, right, but that's how you know we're living in a very dangerous time when the climate of liking stuff and social media input and stuff is worth more than money. So you got to look at it like if you got these people that they refuse to like your stuff, there's a reason. There's a reason they're not liking it. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of that's insecurity. And it's this theory like every, you know, these guys could have unity, but all these dudes are out for themselves. Because very rarely do you see A, B, and C. You see this guy post a record for his homie who put an album out. Like, yo, my homie put an album out yesterday. Go buy this album, motherfucker. Go support that shit. You don't see that much. It's, you know, even friends of rappers and big rappers, you don't even see their friends doing that.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed it's like a very like weird. It's like, well, why would you say you doubt of them never not going to support them? Like,
Yeah, listen, y'all see the fans, but you don't see other rappers supporting other rappers. You don't see it.
sure. But shout out to Benny, man. He's setting a good example for all the new rappers out there. Shout out to Benny out there.
Yeah, no doubt.
What I was curious now too, like I remember hearing you say that you used to do journalism before now too. So before you got into music, you were into journal. You wanted to be a writer now too. I was curious, like, what made you stop wanting to do journal, like in media? Like, what happened? I know your girlfriend like destroyed the work, but like, what happened?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, you brought up a good point. I mean, like, I was wanting to do stuff since I was a kid, you know, and a lot of that stuff was stuff I was doing in a fanzine where it was like you talk to a bunch of different bands, all that nerd shit, and you basically compile it yourself and you do all the work. So, you know, I'm like 13 or 14, I'm making connections in not just the hip hop industry, but
Metal.
also in other industries. Correct. I was also an intern for Sleeping Bag Records, which was EPMD's label, if you remember the first records that EPMD did.
Probably too
Like,
young.
yeah, we were, you know, we were little kids, you know what I'm saying? Me and 10K, we went up to Manhattan and you know, we were that hungry. I was that hungry. I went into Virgil's office from this company, and I was like, yo, we want to work, bro. Like, we're from Brooklyn, we're from, you know, we love, we're in this culture, bro. What do you got for us? We want to work. And he was just like, yo, he's like, y'all are teenagers, y'all are small. He's like, I don't have much. Here's some tickets. So he gave us a stack of tickets for this place called Club Ajax in Manhattan, which had performances by, like, I don't know who you could say, like, you know, Brand Nubian,
Okay.
Chubb Rock. You know, all these guys back then, you know, like Diamond D, all these guys would play these shows. So we were just promoters. You know what I'm saying? We would just go and talk to people. And honestly, me, you know, me and 10K is like, yo, we was the only dudes that wasn't black in the club. This was before hipsters and like all these like rich white kids, these spoiled kids. This was before all that. So we was doing that when, yeah, we was in clubs, bro. People looked at us like, we had nine, like we had nine heads. You know what I mean? So,
So what's like,
yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly your original question, but I was.
oh, like what made you like start doing journalism now too?
Oh,
Like,
correct. Yeah. So it's like once I tried to do the fanzine and I tried to do that stuff on my own, we were very young. So I didn't have money to actually print the magazine myself, you know? So I did get a little discouraged. I was still into writing, I did reviews for certain magazines, but the more I got into hip hop, like I had to like do stuff. So I didn't have enough time to do reviews and do certain interviews. I didn't have time for it. I liked it. I was still getting free tapes from like Road Racer Records and like, you know, I would call these people up as a 13-year-old kid and people fucked with me because I sounded like a kid. But I was like hungry to be in the industry. I'm like asking for interviews and how do I get this guy's number from Testament and Slayer and Nuclear Assault. All these bands a lot of people don't care about, but as a little kid, these were people in the industry. So these were big bands to people like me and Bill. So like these were guys that we looked up to. So by the time I was 13, I was like, I'm doing music. Like I'm gonna be in this industry. I don't know how or what, but I'm gonna be doing this shit. So after doing the zine and me losing all of the papers, all the pictures, I really didn't want to start from zero, because like the shit I was working on, if it would have came out the right way, it would have been a legendary publication now, just because of the bands that I had in there and the legwork I did. So I'm a 13-year-old kid calling up a record label asking to talk to Obituary and Sepultura, who were big bands at the time. You know what I'm saying? So I would cut out of school, go back to the crib, set up a tape recorder into my mom's phone, and I would just do interviews, just like what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? It was on the phone. I would transcribe them, type them out, and I would be doing that. You know what I'm saying? So about the time I was doing that, Bill had a band. Bill was doing his stuff. So we were both young kids trying to get into the industry. You know what I'm saying? So kids now, that's not even an option. The shit we'd have to do was crazy. Like, as a little kid,
You
you'd
guys
be
have
in
to
Manhattan.
go to the actual places.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like we'd be in Manhattan walking, and you'd have a dude that would come up to you, and like some middle-aged guy, which was pretty common back then. And he would ask you, like, hey, you guys rap? Are you guys into hip hop? It was like a commercial, like a weird commercial. And we would be like, yeah, what's up? And he'd be like, oh, he's like, we're going to the studio. And back in the, listen, in the late 80s, the studio was a big deal. No one had studios. No one had their own Pro Tools, MPCs. Nobody had that shit. Okay. Nobody had that shit. So we were little kids. We were like, what do you mean? Like, we didn't understand. And this guy's telling us, hey, we got a tour bus right up parked over there, and we're going to the studio now in New Jersey. Get on the bus. And it was really weird because it's like, yo, we don't even know this fucking guy. And this guy was trying to get me and Bill to go on the bus. We don't even know who's on the bus, just to get us to go to Jersey because he had a studio. So you see what I'm saying? Weird shit would happen back in the day that don't happen now. Because everything is like everybody and their mother has a studio in their house, their friend masters. Nobody needs a, technically, nobody needs a studio anymore. But yeah, but I'm saying back in the day, you could not get your hands on equipment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I
So
heard it was very rare. Yeah.
yeah, it was a different time. But back to what you were saying, it's like I never really left the either industry. Like I'm saying, I still have friends in both industries. You know what I'm saying? I
Yeah.
still go to shows. I still maintain relationships. But you know, with the internet, print writing kind of took a back seat. Magazines weren't doing the best. So I was like, you got to put your time into something else. I mean, over the years, I got back into it. I have friends. I've written for other magazines. I've done interviews with people, some blogs, stuff like that. Maybe one day I'll do a print magazine. You know, I'd still like to do my own magazine, you know. It was just different, bro. You had to do a lot of legwork. There's no
Yeah.
internet. So if you don't have internet, all you got a telephone on your desk, and you got your mom screaming about a phone bill, you know. So
And different. See, yeah, I
shit
like
was
that story.
very different, bro.
It's a very inspiring story because, like, I'll make this quick. I wanted to be a rapper before I did media. I'm in my fifth year in media. I had to
Okay.
be like Black Moon, Smith and Wesson, Pheromone, Speech of Arrested Development. Anyone from the 90s you could pretty much think of now too. But I wouldn't be able to do all this if it wasn't for like the internet. When I first started out, I didn't have a computer. I would call the artist, record right there, and print out on the internet now too. But I
Right.
like it's totally different from when you were doing it and when I started doing it now too. Because I literally
Yep.
just send a DM. That's all you got. That's how we do it.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show you how technology changes. Now people don't even have to work to really progress their career. I mean, they can make records, but they don't have to do as much. They don't have to do legwork. It's a different kind of thing now. You know what I'm saying?
Would you
And
ever start like your own network, like you doing like a podcast and stuff like that? Because what I noticed about you, a lot of people watch your interviews and a lot of people do care what you have to say. And with the internet, what you're saying, working from home, you know, I can see a Lord Goat interview, I mean, Lord Goat podcast taking off because like
right.
you can actually have conversations with another artist that me and you can't have because you guys
Right.
understand. Because
Right.
I'm not an artist.
Right. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's not something I haven't thought about, you know, doing so, like taking a bigger step. It's a possibility. I'm not against it. It's just a matter if it makes sense, you know. A
Of
lot of
course.
stuff, you know how it is, it's time consuming. And if I do something, I don't want to do it half-assed, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you want to go all the way.
So
Like,
it's a poss it's a, yeah.
so sorry to cut you off now, too. Like, what I
No, it's
noticed,
fine.
I won't take up much of your time now, too. But what I noticed now, too, is now you've been on a lot of tours now, too, but you still find the time to put a lot of time into your music now, too. And what I like about this new age of the internet now, too. Have somebody like a Stu Baynes hit you up, be like, "You're Gore-Tex, yo, I really respect what you did before. Let's make some magic." So, what's the feeling of like a new producer? Well, first off, how'd that project come together? Final expertise, because man, like, I like to say that you're Magnum Opus. I do like Art of Dying, but Final Expertise just hits different because I've grown with you throughout the years and I know the story, but. I also love this underground renaissance now too, and I like how
Right.
this. So how does this come together?
Yeah, I mean, Stu Bangers and Final Expenses, that came about because, I mean, I know Stu for a while. Me and Stu were gonna make a record years ago, and he just got super busy. So we were like, when the smoke clears, we're gonna do something really crazy. Let's just get these projects out, you know, finish what we gotta finish, and we can just start building. That's basically what happened. I mean, he sent me a lot of beats. I'm really picky. Like most people would know, I dislike most beats that I hear, you know, and even if they're okay, it doesn't really linger for a long time. They're not, you'll know when you hear something that's like, okay, you know, because I make beats too. Not every beat you're gonna make is a banger. You might make a beat that's like, yeah, it's all right, but tomorrow I'm not gonna really care about it. It's not really gonna. So you want to avoid those kind of beats where you hear it instantly. And you like it, but it's not gonna last the long run, you
Yeah.
know? Me and Stu were just like, yo, let's just do something crazy. It took a while because like shit happens, you know what I'm saying? And shit sometimes
Yeah.
takes a while. It's out of my hands, or something happens, or somebody loses the tape, or sometimes the engineer disappears, you know, and like he's got the tapes with him. Like all kinds of shit that happens behind the scenes that people don't really know. So that record took a while. I mean, I like it. Some things could have been better, but I mean, it's cool. I mean, we definitely want to do another one, and I think the things that I wanted to fix on the first one, this one's going to be better, you know? Just the way it sounds, you know?
Well, the reason why I brought that up now too, because I noticed how a lot of artists are doing like the one-off producing and then now two is now two, like one producer, one rapper. But I was curious
Right.
too, knowing that your guys' history, because he has a record of Ill Bill, I think you guys, I want to get into that now too. DJ Muggs, this guy's like just literally like in the underground like crazy. You don't have to be now too, but he's putting out some quality work, Rome Street, you know, Al Divino. So what I
Right.
was curious now too, was there when the Ill Bill and DJ Muggs was happening back in 2007, was there talks of a Gore-Tex and DJ Muggs album, but it never happened?
Yeah, what happened was me and him were talking before that. Me and him were talking in 2005. Before he was working with Bill, he wanted to do a record with me.
I remember something.
And yeah, and it's a longer story, but basically there was some third party, there was a third party involved that really had to put his nose in the middle out of jealousy and fucked up the whole deal on purpose. But in print, I mean, listen, I was in Muggs' studio back in the day. I picked out my beats. He was mad cool. We got along. The energy was dope. I got to the studio, you know what I'm saying? He put his laptop in my hand. He's like, yo, pick out beats. And this is a guy who I grew up listening to. And, you know, as a producer, he was definitely an influence.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just with my home. I brought my homie from Brooklyn to the, you know, and we were just like, wow, man, this is crazy. Like, we're in the studio. And, you know, yo, it was mad cool. Like, he got his chef, this Japanese chick. She cooked us food. Like, you know, I'm just like, yo. He turns around. There's this, like, big statue, like a 3-foot statue. And the statue is just filled with weed. It's like a weed statue. He's like, yo, help yourself, bro. Yo, we were like, all right, cool. So we just, you know what I'm saying? We just smoked like 10 blunts. We got food. Yo, the shit was cool. And a third party had to intervene and start posting all this stuff that we spoke about earlier. All these fake lies, Photoshop pictures, pictures of like family members of mine. Like, really, bro? Like, who's really, is it that serious? So they posted all these pictures on soulassassins.com. And yeah, like, it, even shit, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people know I've been smoking my whole life. You know what I'm saying? I've been smoking for years, smoking weed. But everybody that knows me, bro, no, I don't do hard drugs. I don't give a fuck what people think, what they spoke about. It's a whole different thing. You can smoke weed, but if you're talking about real shit to fuck up someone's reputation, that shit ain't cool, bro. Yeah. That shit is not respected. So somebody was doing that, and, you know, I called Muggs. Basically, I was like, listen, all this shit is on your website. All these fake lies and rumors. Like, I got kids, bro. I don't need my children seeing this stuff. And he was getting stressed out, you know what I'm saying? Because he's like, yo, I don't really want to get in the middle of all that. Of like, I'm like, I get it, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? And it was just, bro, it was one thing after another. And long story short, the record didn't come out. We didn't record, you know? So I'm like, all right, cool. This guy's going to fuck up another thing. And it's going to make me look like I did something else. Yeah. And more people are going to talk shit because they don't know how it really is and the way things really are in reality. So I lost that opportunity. And then because I lost that opportunity, people are going to say, oh, yeah, he didn't do this. He's lazy and blah, blah, blah. Nah, I was in the studio. I was ready to sleep there for 7 days and not go back to New York. I would have slept on the motherfucker's floor.
All right, I understand what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. It ain't like I wouldn't have been dedicated, like, you know. So, again, another missed opportunity. You know what I'm saying? That's still, you know, he's still the man. But I'm pretty sure that came and went. You know what I'm saying? That was a moment in time. And you know, it is what it is. Like, that's the past for me. I don't really care. And obviously he likes to work with guys nobody knows. I know he likes to work with new guys. You know what I'm saying? That don't have reputations yet, and he likes to work, and that's cool. But I think honestly, I think we could have did the classic. Cause the beats that he had that I was picking for my record. Well, crazy, bro. The shit's always kind of dope. Yep.
I was always, because that's why when I remember when I seen that album with Ill Bill, I remember I was like, I wonder if that's because he couldn't do the album with Gore-Tex. I remember seeing something. I don't know why. I think it was on MySpace or something like that. But it was like,
right,
next album, Mug's not happening anymore. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? Then I seen that Bill album. I'm like, I wonder if that was the connection. So as I grow older, I get to find out what actually happened.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess him working with Bill was an afterthought. Like, they did that after the fact, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was going to do a record with Muggs when Nonfiction was still together. Before we had that temporary split back then, I was going to do the record all the way back then.
Yeah, see, and so, would you be open?
Yeah, man, you know.
See, one of the things I'm waiting for is just to him to be like, Lord Goat? Wait, my man Gore-Tex. Yo, Gore. Let's do some more business. Would you be ever open to that?
Wait, say that again. I didn't hear you. My bad.
Like, let's say, like, you know, Muggs open on social media one day. He's like, Lord, go. I was like, yeah, it's my man Gore-Tex. So if he just, you know, hits you up out of the way, you're Gore-Tex. Let's finish some, you know, unfinished business.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't I?
And because
I'm saying I would be great. I have no problems with homie. Homie's the OG. It's just I felt like he didn't give me a fair shake, you know what I mean, to explain what was going on. And then in the process of that, I got locked up for like 2, 3 weeks. It's a whole other long story. It doesn't matter, but in those 3 weeks when I came out, shit was already fucked up by
Yeah.
you know who. So you know who already went in there and fucked my whole shit up. You can
Yeah.
make lies, I'm a junkie. You can make lies, I'm an alcoholic. I mean, it got so bad that I had an Australian tour set up for, I think, February 06 or something. This is a long time ago. But I was getting good money for the shows. They were going to fly me out to Australia. I was going to do 5 shows around the whole country. And each show was like 5 grand at the time.
Oh shit.
So, it's like, yeah, I'm going out there for 25 stacks. I'm speaking to a promoter. I already know because I'm already getting hit up that everybody in Australia is happy I'm coming because I have mad fans out there, you know? So they're already talking about it. And there's a buzz. And I'm waiting to hear back from this guy because he's going to send me a check. So I'm like, all right, in order for me to do this right, we gotta set it up. You know what I'm saying? So the guy hits me up. He's like, hey, Gore-Tex. He's like, I got some bad news, bro. So I'm like, of course you do. Let me have it. What else? Why wouldn't it be bad news? You know what I'm saying? Like, of course there's a catch, right? So he says to me, he's like, hey, Gore-Tex, man. He's like, my boss, I really apologize. I know we got this tour was setting up, but my boss is getting cold feet. He's nervous. He doesn't want to do it now. I'm like, oh, he doesn't want to do it? You're supposed to send me 10 grand this morning. I'm not talking to you about doing the show. I'm waiting for a deposit, bro. The fuck are you talking about? And then he turns around. He's like, yeah, well, he's like, I don't know who's doing it, but these guys are making it very difficult for you to come here because these guys keep messaging my boss saying you're an alcoholic. I'm like, an alcoholic? I'm like, bro, I don't even drink beer. The fuck are you talking about? I don't even like alcohol. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I wasn't going to say it, but basically Necro is saying that you can't even go to Australia and do a show because you can't stand up because you're a fall down, drop dead alcoholic.
Yeah, that's a weirdo shirt.
I'm like, alcoholic? I'm like, who the fuck told you that? So, because someone turned around and they said, if you book Gore-Tex, I'll never come back to Australia. You'll never book me again if you book him. So you see how all those people jumped ship to him and didn't stay loyal to me. So I'm like, you know what? Cool. So Australia got poisoned. Even though I still got tons of fans in Australia, it's like it's active. It's been active for years because I still have fans all over the world that still tell me, they'll still tell me, yo, so and so said this. It's like, how old are we now?
Like, come on.
Yeah, it's like people are still in first grade. You know what I mean? Like,
I
until you hit them in between the eyes with a pipe and you take their nose out, they still think it's funny to sit like this on the computer. And it's like, and listen, these could be fans. These could be anybody because let me tell you something. Social media, it's a double-edged sword. These fans also want to stab you in the throat. So you'll have fans that also hate you.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. Yeah.
So, and you know what? It's like I never ever did that when I was a kid. See, when I was a kid, I never thought about trying to contact Guru or Rakim on the computer to send him a message.
I was
That's
on Twitter.
unheard of, bro. Nope. Who would do that? Who would actually play themselves back in the day? Not that there was internet, but who
Yeah.
would have done that? So now it's a free for all. The messages, I mean, the shit that we get, it makes you stop and think how sick, disconnected, and how much mental illness there is in the world right now.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I'll keep it super funky with you before we finish this up, you know what I'm saying? I got people right now that are just stalking me for years. Same people, bro. Same people. Mentally crippled people. All they'll do, they'll sit for years. They'll get on YouTube. Oh, Gore-Tex is a liar. Gore-Tex is a junkie. Gore-Tex is a pedophile. Anything you can imagine, these people still do, bro. And these people, bro, are in their 40s. They're in their 40s and they're fucking old. And these people have nothing better to do. Message my girl, send pictures to people. It's never ending, bro. So it's like my whole career has been plagued with people trying to actively stop what the fuck I do.
But you don't stop, though. That's what I like, though. What keeps that drive going?
I mean, it's like no one's gonna stop me because I was there from the beginning, bro. Like I seen the real shit. My cousin was a DJ in Long Beach. You know what I'm saying? He's obviously older, but he would DJ for everybody. This is a guy who basically taught me what was fresh and what was not fresh. So when I'm like 7 or 8 years old, he's teaching me how to do my laces. He's teaching me which Pumas to buy, which Pumas not to buy. See? So I had that teaching at an early age, and I also knew music because he allowed me to go through his collection. So I knew I wasn't going to be in school. This shit is my school. Music is my college. You know what I'm saying? Hip hop is my education. Music is my education. Yeah, I could have went to college and been anything. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have to fucking worry about a lot of shit. You know what I'm saying? If I didn't do this. So technically, I made my life much harder by going this route.
But
Because because now it's 2023. There's no pot of gold waiting for people. They're gonna get a big record deal. There's no pot of gold for any of these guys,
yeah.
unless you're 22 years old and you're a drill rapper, or your cousin is Lil Wayne. If you're not that, you're gonna be one of these underground guys that puts out 60 records in a year, don't make no money, don't do any tours, but he's got 65 records out
Yeah.
that nobody knows about. And his Spotify numbers are 7,000 listeners a month. And nobody knows who he is, but 16 other underground rappers. So it's like, it's a weird scale. You know what I'm saying? It's like you do it one way and you could do it the other way, and you're not getting anywhere either way. So, it's like a lot of people, I ain't negative, but yo, this shit ain't for you, bro. You know what I'm saying? This shit is not for you. If you got an option, go to school, And I'll be honest with you, there's people that want to do songs with me. They hit me up. They want to do verses. They want beats. That's cool. But it's like, I'll see some people struggling. And it's like, I know what it is to struggle, bro. I'm a real dude. You know what I'm saying?
Oh
This
yeah,
shit,
you
this game is like the stock market. You know what I'm saying? This game is up and down. Sometimes you'll be up and sometimes you'll be down. Sometimes you'll have money and sometimes you struggle. You know what I'm saying? But when I see these new guys, and some of these new guys got like five, six, seven kids. And they're out there trying to like buy beats for $15, and they're trying to buy beats for $10, and then they want to give you $50 for a verse, and they're begging you for a verse. They're like, yo, my man, I've been listening to you. Yo, bro, just do me like. It's like, yo, man, you got five kids, bro. Why are you trying to like beg for collabs and trying to buy $15 beats that are terrible when like your kids are depending on you? So I'll be honest with you, bro. That shit bothers me. So if a kid wants to work with me. And I see him like I if I see like he's you know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's like social media, they'll share links. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel comfortable taking people's money. You know what I'm saying? I don't need the money that bad, but I'm gonna rob some kids for money for a beat or a verse when he's struggling himself and he can't even afford his own, he can't even take care of his own kids, and he's looking to buy beats, and he's looking to just it's just and he's in a really low level of it just makes me because I have a conscience, you know what I'm saying? I feel bad for those kids. So some of these guys, it's like, yo, bro, that's just not for you, bro. Go get a job. I did it. You know what I'm saying? Well, listen, when we were recording The Future Is Now, while we were recording The Future Is Now, I was working 14 hours a day at a bagel store, getting up at 5 in the morning, getting up at 3 in the morning, taking a 2 hour bus ride. I'm talking about miserable, suicidal, depressing, horrible jobs. Just to be able to survive. And then after work, I'm going to the studio with Pete Rock. And it's like, yeah, of course, we paid him. We paid him to work, but we're also on the grind. You know what I'm saying? So I just put in 14 hours in the bagel store and I'm falling asleep at the session. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm working all day.
Yeah.
So it's a grind, bro. A lot of people don't see that. You know what I'm saying? And that's fine. I have nothing to prove. You know what I'm saying? I'll talk to people. I'm not saying I'm better or cooler or anything, but people don't really know what it's like. You know what I'm saying? They don't know how it was to really work and how to really do legwork. And back then, if you did the legwork and your shit was correct, you would be rewarded because you would get to work with all these greats.
That's what you guys did.
I'm saying I would cut cold cuts during the day, but I'm in the studio with Large Professor all night. And we're talking about records and samples, and I'm asking Pete Rock about, yo, what about this record? What about this guy? You know, and I'm like, not bothering him, but, you know.
Yeah.
It was funny, but, like, I'm on his back. I'm asking him about all these dudes. So, for me, these are, like, dreams come true, bro.
Yeah.
That stuff I wouldn't trade in the world, regardless of the struggle. That shit you don't trade, bro. That stuff, that shit you take to the grave. You know what I mean?
That was your dream. And when you live it, it's like, yo, like, oh, what's happening?
But yeah, bro, none of the other shit really matters. You know what I'm saying? Because, yeah, I wish we would have made more records, but at the end of the day, the records that are there, they're going to be there forever. And it's proof. People still like it. People still come up to me. People still listen to it. You know? So I'm not complaining. I wish more people heard it, because I feel not enough people heard it. I mean, I know with the internet and stuff, it's a platinum album. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, but there's gotta be two times.
It's a platinum now. It's a platinum album. I know the people that downloaded it. I know at one point, you know, it was selling a lot of copies, but it's like the guy who originally put it out is a shady piece of shit, you know? Mm-hmm. A total dirtbag. So we know we got fucked originally, but like I said, it influenced a lot of people, bro. So it's important to me, at least, that it meant so much to other people. But I don't sit around saying, oh, the future is now, it's so great. I don't really think about it, quite honestly, unless I'm talking to somebody or somebody asks me about it. It's not something I say, oh, well, I think I'm so cool and important because of this record. No. Judge me about the last verse I spit on somebody's record or my solo record. I don't care what I did 20 years ago. If it's cool and it came out dope, cool. But I'm not sitting around resting on my laurels. I'm not saying, hey, everybody should, you know, come worship Gore-Tex because he made the future is now. Like, I don't care about that shit. None of that shit even matters to me. You know what I'm saying? We made a good record. It helped people. That's cool. But I look to the future. You know what I'm saying? I don't look at the past. I look at the present and the future of what I'm capable of doing, not what we did. Because some of these new guys, like, oh, yeah, those guys are old. Those guys have been around. Like, these new guys that every one of them sounds like Rock Marciano. I'm not a hater. I think he's great. But everybody sounds like him now. So that became one style where I noticed if you ain't doing that style, these kids will not fuck with you. So I'm like, wait a minute. Isn't it supposed to be where everybody should have their own sound? I mean, even if people are influenced, I get it. Listen, yeah. Everybody's influenced. People influenced by Mobb Deep. People influenced by Wu-Tang. People are going to be influenced by Marciano and Griselda. That's what it is. I get that. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of these guys should try harder. And when I say try harder, just try to sound different. Not like all these other guys. Flow like somebody else. Come up with a new flow.
Yeah.
Because honestly, bro, that's all I try to do, bro. Like, if I wanted to, I could sound like Rock Marciano, too.
I prefer you.
If I wanted to. If I wanted to. I'm saying if I wanted to be like these guys.
Yeah.
But my whole shit is about taking chances. So to me, in a sense, this whole hip-hop shit that I did, it's like you could look at it almost like it's an experiment. Like, I wanted to do something that hasn't been done before. I wanted to flow like nobody flowed before. For better or worse, you might not like it. You might not say, oh, he's not as good as Razzcast or somebody. But I made sure whatever I did sounds completely different than what anybody's ever done. So if it fails, I'll take it. I'm good with that. As long as it's something that's never been done before, I don't care what happens. Yeah, we all want to sell 5 million records.
Yeah, of course.
But the fact that it didn't happen, it doesn't change anything for me. It doesn't change the pleasure I get when I create, because that's part of being part of the culture. I don't need these guys to tell me, because you're not wearing $3,000 worth of polo in every new video, like you have to keep shopping. So if you're not shopping with these guys, they look at you like, this shit is whack. This shit, it's like they're not getting that. It's like, yo, bro, what you're doing is you're crippling the real longevity by keeping that mentality. So it doesn't, you know, at the end of the day, bro, none of that shit matters. You know, and even, and at the end of the day, people are going to talk about what they're going to talk about. People want to forget about classic records. Some people want to pretend nonfiction never happened. I get it. You know what I'm saying? I get the way people are. They want to pretend we never had records. I notice when some of these guys make playlists, they make 90s playlists, they never put nonfiction on them. You know what I'm saying? But back in the day, we were on every playlist, The Source, all that shit.
Pro tapes.
Yeah, but you know, now it's like people want to forget that we're there because motherfuckers either insecure, they never made a record, they never toured the world, they never left. Listen, if you never left your own backyard and you see all these other guys on planes flying around, you're going to be annoyed. Yeah, that's just the way it is. Listen, I used to want to tour. I'm like, yo, we got to get out there. I don't know what we got to do. So we worked hard enough to be able to go and do that. And by us going to do that, we put our kind of hip hop, which is basically, it was new at the time. Don't forget, New York Underground Street. We weren't Wu-Tang or Mobb Deep, but we were right behind, I'm saying we were right behind them doing that, like putting those bricks up to that house.
Carrying the flag.
Exactly. So we were carrying the flag for that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, again, like I said, people want to pretend that we never existed. But you can't tell that to the fans all around the world or the people that care, the people, you know, who, you know, it's like we were there. Like, I know people that got killed where they buried their friends. They covered him in T-shirts and nonfiction records in the casket. The whole casket was nonfiction. You know what I'm saying? And Necro, too, because that kid, he was a Necro fan, too. But the point is, he had all his shit in his casket. You know, it's like that's crazy to me. That's very touching to me. Because he could have had anything.
Like how you feel when you make music, they felt that same thing.
Uh-huh. My point is, bro, it's all 360.
Very true.
It takes X amount of years for it to come back around. People start listening to it again. We just try to do something timeless, you know what I'm saying? Something that still holds up that you can listen to now. The Topics, William Cooper, you know, the Chambers, the FEMA camps, all that shit, you know, we discussed all that, you know what I'm saying? And look what happened. You could see what happened. And now it's like shit is a mirage, bro. Shit is like the Truman Show. nothing is real. Nothing is real.
My trip says AI, yo. It's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And the AI is worse than nuclear war. So we're not in that realm, in that regard, we're not looking too good, bro. We're not looking too good. But, you know, we just got to hope, bro. You know what I'm saying? Because I know in the next 10 years, we're gonna be pretty much terminated. There's no way that's not going to happen just because if you look closely at what they're doing, you know, we're not even talking about politics. Technically, we're just talking about China and Russia and India having nuclear war, having nukes, and they have nuclear missiles. And all these guys are talking about, you know what? We're not going to deal with the American dollar anymore. And once a country says that, they're not saying fuck Americans. But if they're telling you, we ain't even looking at your money. We don't want to see your American dollars here. Your American dollars are worthless now to our countries. You can bet that it's going to be those three against us. And we're going to be fighting for our fucking lives against those three countries. And all of them have nukes and they all fucking hate us.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be doing too good here considering who we're letting in the country and who we're being friends with and all this other shit. So that's a whole other different topic, but we're not looking good in that regard. And you know, that's why if you look in the sky at any given moment, there's 15 planes shooting powder out on top of each other.
Oh, that's, like I said, that's a whole other subject right now. We go on for like 4 hours.
Yeah, I mean, we could get into that another time because, you know, as a subject, that's, you know, that's never ending. You know what I'm saying? We already know what they're capable of, you know? So, yeah, it's out of control, bro. You know what I'm saying? I can't really say what's really in store for us, but it's not good, man. You know,
All we can
because
do,
the
man.
stuff that they're shooting down in planes is either it's one of two things. It's either to help you, it's either to help the planet and what's surrounding it, or it's there actively to kill you instantly. And let me tell you something. I've been all over the United States in the last year. It's in every state. So what do they do? What do they have 10 planes in the sky every day for by 7 o'clock in the morning? What's the real reason? So, you know, we could talk about that forever. We could do that next time, but
Yeah, of course.
it ain't good, bro. It's not a good thing, you know? So,
Best thing we could do is just pray for the best. Well,
yeah, bro.
my guy Gord, this was we had a lot of interviews, man. This one was one of my favorites, man. Not because I was a fan for you for a long time. This was an unexpected interview. We didn't even ask half the questions on here, but that's what I like about having a conversation of somebody like that. So Gore-Tex, man, I'd like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the 2 hours
Anytime, bro.
to do this.
Anytime.
Anything?
Anytime, bro. You know, it's like I don't like to do a lot of podcasts and a lot of stuff. You know, people ask me, and if it sometimes it's just hit or miss. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, bro. I mean, it's anytime, bro. Next time, hit me up, and we'll continue this.
Like
We'll
that.
definitely continue this. And I appreciate it. For people that don't know, I got a record coming out.
Yes.
What month are we in? April? May?
Oh, we're in May.
Okay, so we're in May, whatever. So pretty much, I want to say June. I want to say June 28th, me and Ali got a record coming out. Recognize Ali.
Okay.
It's called Mortuary Drape. And I talked about it a little bit. We dropped a single a few months ago, and I had to go on tour, so I couldn't drop the second single, or else I would have put it out with me recognized and Pro Dillinger. It's called
Oh,
Coke. It's called Coke. It's called Coke Synagogue. Yeah, the shit is crazy, bro. The shit is crazy. So the shit I got dropping, bro. The next, it's some other shit, bro. It's like if people never heard that old stuff, it's just something new. It's just a completely new, for me at least. It's a new vibe. You know what I'm saying? So people should go check that out. Run that up. Me and Bill also were doing an album where
okay.
it's just me and Bill. Yeah, it's me and Bill. It's a group, and
Your name?
you're pretty much the first person I told. People don't even know about this shit.
Oh, yeah, world exclusive,
So,
y'all. Is that a good thing?
yeah, bro. So it's I'm gonna make an announcement at some point, you know, but I don't want to really announce it until
Oh,
more
yeah, of
shit is
course.
lined
Sure,
up.
fine.
Yeah. But yeah, bro, there's stuff coming out, you know what I'm saying? So everybody that's supporting, that's keeping it 100, that fucks with my shit, yo, I appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? Because real people are few and far in between. You know, it's just, you know. So, but yeah, bro, I appreciate that. That's love. Yo, thanks for having me.
Hey, my guy. Yeah, I don't even have to ask you if there's anything you want to promote. You
Yep.
already answered my question, my guy. So, if you made
Yeah,
it,
bro.
man, I got a complete legend. And I don't care if he doesn't think he's a legend in my eyes, legend in the United States of America, legend in Canada, one and only Lord Goat. I thank you, my guy.
Yo, respect, bro.
Okay.
Peace to you and your family, bro.